Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is a responsible day for the 19th of Iyar. The date we'll get to later on in the tshuva, but as a responsible of Shut Yaskil Avdi, which is Rav Avadya Hedaya, who was an important Sephardic rabbi in Yerushalayim in the late 19th, early 20th century. Actually, just the early to mid 20th century. He was born in 1890, but he wasn't a factor in halacha until later. So Rav Avadya Hedaya writes six volumes of Shut Yaskil Avdi. Eight volumes were published, some of them after he passed away. He was at Yeshivat Beit El, was a judge in the rabbinical court, important Torah scholar. And so he was asked in the early 1930s about what's called a primus stove. A primus stove is something that's still in use. You can find it on, online. You can find it on Wikipedia. I think you can buy one. So Wikipedia talks about it, and some of the basic facts of it are going to be important for us to understand the discussion that's going to come up. So I'll just quote from Wikipedia. The principle of operation of the primus stove is to light the stove. The user pours a small amount of alcohol into a circular spirit cup just below the burner and lights it to preheat the burner assembly. When it is hot, the user pressurizes the tank by means of a small hand pump integrated into the housing. That's the important part that's going to be for us, which forces the kerosene from the tank up through the rising tube and the ascending pipe to the preheated burner head where the fuel is heated and vaporized. So basically, you have a fuel canister on the bottom. You put it where you can put in alcohol or kerosene or something like that. You light it. That you're allowed to do on Yom Tov, which is what our discussion is going to be about. You can light it on Yom Tov because if you think of a pre-existing fire, we light fires on Yom Tov. But then you need the heat from that to get up into the top part, which is going to get hot and vaporize the heat such that it can heat the metal on which you're going to place something to cook. Right, so that's where the question comes up that was presented to Rav Avadya Hedaya, and he's going to later turn to Rav Cook for discussion of that as well. And the question came from a Rav in Jerba. The Rav in Jerba is Rav named Rabbi Chanina HaKohen, who signs his name Sephardi Tahor. Sephardim, or some Sephardim who have that qualification, are proud, maybe is not the right word, but are quick to, or are their custom is to note that they are Sephardim Tahorim, which means that all the way back down their line, they are Sephardim, that they've never intermarried with Ashkenazim is the point. They've kept the Sephardic tradition pure. I think there are fewer and fewer of them as time goes on, but you have Sephardim Tahorim out there. He was one, and he's in the line of Jerba, and he is writing to Rav Hadidai. He says, you sent me, I don't know what the relationship was, but they probably have a relationship. You sent me a Gilyon, which I think may be a magazine or a Torah journal of some sort. And you have an article in there where you wrote at length, this Rav Chanina HaKohen of Jerba is saying to Rav Avadya Hedaya that you think that it's okay to light one of these and use them on Yom Tov. So as I said before, it seems like it should be okay because you light the fire. Lighting fire is allowed on Yom Tov. Then it raises up the heat, and that's allowed. There's nothing that you're doing there. We'll get to in a second what you are or aren't doing there. And then you cook something, and that's allowed on Yom Tov. So he says, I want to write you and let you know that on Jerba, we used to do that as well. We would use such prima stoves, which came around in the late 1800s. We used to use such prima stoves on Yom Tov, and then we would leave them and not put them out until after Yom Tov, because extinguishing a fire is a more complicated Yom Tov proposition. It's generally not permitted to extinguish fire. So that's what we would do. We'd light it and then leave it till after Yom Tov. But afterwards, we had a problem, and we came to realize that we think there might be an issue with, now I mentioned it before, and that's why I made sure to bring it up, the hand pump. The way that the kerosene in the tank rises up through, there's something called a rising tube and an ascending pipe. The way it gets up through the rising tube, the ascending pipe, to get to the heat, the tray on top where you're going to put down your pot or your pan to cook something. So the way you do that is through a hand pump, right? So that hand pump is going to be much of our discussion because, says the Rav from Jerba, we were unsure whether that kli shel nafoach, nafoach means when you blow on something to get it up somewhere. So the pressure, the hand pressure, the pressure pump here is pumping the kerosene, it's sort of air pumping it up into the top of the thing. We were worried about that. We weren't sure what to do about it, so we didn't paskin on the issue. It's a new thing. We don't see any explicit sources in Sfarim about it, and therefore we were concerned about it. So he's writing to him to find out what he thinks about that. So he says there's room to say that it's mutar, because you can say that it's not similar, and here's the issue in Shulchan Aruch that we might not have remembered on our own, but that he is aware of. In Tav Kuf Bet in Aor HaChaim, in Sif Aleph, in the first paragraph of Tav Kuf Bet, 502, in Aor HaChaim, the Shulchan Aruch Paskin, De'ein Novchin B'mafoach. So another area, another way that you can deal with fire, leaving aside the prima stove now for a second, is that you can have a fire and you want to blow air into it because that makes the fire burn higher and burn stronger. So that bellows that is like a device. I can't paint the picture for you with my words. That's because I'm not as good at that as I should be. It's got two long handles and it's got an accordion-like thing in the middle that takes in air, and then when you press the two handles together, it blows the air out. Open them up, it brings the air in. So you've got this device called a bellows, and you have, Halacha Shulchan Aruch says that we don't use such devices on Yom Tov. If you have a fire, let's say you want to put a bellows on it, I would extinguish fires all the time if I tried to use a bellows. But back when people used to use bellows, they knew what they were doing. And the way you use a bellows is you blow it at the right place in the fire. It makes the fire burn higher or hotter for a while. And you might want that because you want to, if you have a fire that's burning at 200 degrees above the tray, you want to burn it at 400 to cook some food, you put the bellows in it, and it burns like that for a little bit longer, and you're better off. So the halacha shekhanah is that you don't use that on Yom Tov. And the reason that the Beit Yosef gives is the name of Rashi is that the mechze ki'uman ose milacha, that it looks like a craftsman plying his trade. So we're going to have to realize that the bellows could be used in a home by a baal habayit, by a regular person, to make his fire get hotter. But you also had many tradesmen who wanted to increase their heat. Let's say you had somebody who was going to work in metals and was going to shape metals. So if the fire's not strong enough, not high enough, not hot enough, he would use a bellows. That would be slightly different bellows. It was a more professional kind of bellows with a better power, a better structure, whatever it was. But it was an example of plying a trade and looking like you were plying a trade. So therefore, the halacha became that we don't use such things on Yom Tov because they look too much like them. That's the way Rashi understands. So he says, well, but maybe this Rav Hanina Kohen from Jerba says that maybe that's not relevant because there, the goal of the bellows is to increase the flame of the fire. And that's what umanim, that's what the tradesmen want to do. They want a hotter fire for whatever purpose they're using the fire for. They're forging steel, they're blowing glass, what do I know? They're doing whatever they're doing, but they need a hotter fire. And that's so they don't have to wait, or that it's not hot enough as they have it now. But in the Prima stove, that's not what we're doing at all. We're just trying to get the little fuel from one place to another, and it's just a pump for that purpose totally. So maybe he suggests that it doesn't look like an uman, and therefore even the Shulchan Aruch passes that you can't use any kinds of bellows or hand pumps. I mean, the point is that this thing looks somewhat like, it's sort of functioning somewhat like a bellows, and that it is, you press it or move it or turn it or however you manipulate it, but then it causes air to go into something to push the fuel that's inside of it up. So you're using air to push. It looks somewhat the same. But maybe since in the case in the Shulchan Aruch that they're talking about, where you have an uman, a tradesman who wants to increase the fire, this doesn't look like that because here you're not trying to increase the fire, you're just trying to move the fuel from one place to the other so that it will heat something else. And therefore, then maybe there's room to be matir. So he turns to Ravada Yedaya and he says, can you please let us know what you and other great rabbis of Jerusalem think about this situation so we can figure out what we're supposed to do as well. So Ravada Yedaya starts his answer by saying, let me first go into the reasons that people think there might be a problem. Right? So the Gemara that is the relevant Gemara is in Beit Zadat Lamed Daled Amud Aleph, 34a. Tanu Rabbanan, Ein Nofchin B'Mafoach, Aval Nofchin B'Shvofer. You can't blow a fire with a mafoach, a bellows, but you can use a shvofer. It would be like a hollow tube of some sort. So there too, I guess you could blow with your mouth, or you could find a way to blow onto the fire, but it would clearly be of a lesser form, and that's why you could use that. And Rashi says, mafoach, you can, because it's Mexico, and like we saw before, it looks too much like you're a craftsman really doing it in the professional way of getting fire to rise. But that leaves open the possibility that if that's only because you're using a bellows that belongs to such a craftsman, such a tradesman. But if there were separate, as there were in Rashi's time for sure, separate bellows that were clearly bellows belonging to balabatim, to homeowners, so not the same thing at all, but let's say you have ladders that are used by the pros and that are like the long ones, that whatever, and then you have the ones that most ordinary people use. And you have other things like that. You have the tools of a professional and the tools of an ordinary person. So here too with the bellows, it seemed like there was a possibility. And therefore, if you use the bellows of a balabait, if you use that smaller kind of a bellows, which maybe would only get the fire to rise for a short period of time or to a lesser extent, but by virtue of it being a different kind of bellows, maybe, says Rav Hodaya, you don't have to worry that it looks like an uman, that it looks like you're doing it professionally because you're using a whole different tool. That's the way Rashi reads it. But the problem is, if that were true, then why wouldn't the Gemara differentiate among types of bellows? You always have that question of the Gemara. If somebody says, no, that's talking about that case, really this case was different, then you say, well, why didn't the Gemara make that explicit? So the suggestion here is, says Rav Avadia Daya, that the Gemara thought that it was telling you a more interesting or a more novel idea that even a professional who has sitting right there a bellows, a professional bellows, and you might have thought, therefore, that he can't do anything to the fire because it'll always look like he's raising the heightening the fire in his professional way, that he's allowed to use a shofarot nonetheless. He can use one of those tubes, and these tubes also are shel uman, meaning it's also a tool of a professional. If he wants to, you know, you can easily imagine if you're in the business of firing things up, you know, forging steel, forging metals, and turning them into things, that there are different levels to which you want to do it. So if you want to get a fire to jump, you know, 10 feet in the air, and you want it to last for X long and be X hot, then maybe you need a professional bellows, and you do the bellows. You do it, you know, twice. But it could be that even one time of those bellows produces so much fire or so much heat or raises it so much that you wouldn't want that, and therefore you might also have a shofar, you have a tube that you can blow with it on for more delicate raisings of, right? You have gross tools, as it was, tools that do big jobs, and you have smaller tools. And you might have thought that with the smaller tool, you wouldn't be allowed to do it because this person is an uman, is a craftsman. So that would be the bigger kiddush. That's one way to read Rashi. And then we were supposed to understand and infer from the Gemara that if it was a balabayitz mafoach, if it was the bellows of a homeowner, that should obviously be okay, because we're even allowing the use of a shvoferet, of a palo tube, of a uman, of a professional, of a craftsman who's doing these things, then obviously we would allow the bellows of a ordinary person. That's the way he reads Rashi. But then he points out that the Ri and the Tosfos says no, he thinks that all bellows are included, the bellows of a professional, the bellows of a craftsman, as well as the bellows of an ordinary homeowner, an ordinary person. But it says the Ri, ha'olam nahagu heter bo ayidei shinui. But when it came to the owner, homeowner's mafor, the homeowner's bellows, there the custom had become to allow people to use it as long as they did it with a shinui. Right? A shinui in many areas of halacha, you do something slightly differently or meaningfully differently than the ordinary way you do it, that changes the act from our halachic perspectives and sometimes allows for various kulot, for various leniencies. So that's a topic of its own that we're not going to get into. But here, the idea was that if you used a homeowner's bellows in a different way than usual, however that would be, however you define that, you know, I don't know, maybe you do it with your legs, you know, you put the handles between your legs and you blow it that way, it's much less convenient, and it's different. That difference might make it okay, it might be allowed. Revayu Daya notes that the fact that the Ri reports that custom and doesn't object to it, doesn't complain about it, also shows that a mafoch shel ba'al ha'bayit, that a homeowner's bellows, is treated halachically differently than a craftsman, a tradesman's bellows, because we just said he's allowed to do it. We would say you're allowed to do it with a shinui, whereas we don't say that about the bellows of an oman. So that's two opinions I think we have so far. The Rambam, he says, in Perek Dalet, Hilchos Yom Tov Halacha Zayin, says, Ein Novchin, Kidei Shelo, right? You can't use a bellows. Kidei Shelo Yaaseh Kederech Sha'omnim Osim. So it seems like he's following Rashi. Right, that would be the same. It sounds like the very same thing as Rashi. The worry is that you are going to do it like an uman does, like a tradesman does, and therefore you can't do it for all the reasons we said. It would be just like Rashi. Then he writes, "V'ulam efshar leha'amis." Now I find that phrase always very, very interesting in halacha. So that's why I left it in my, you know, when I cut up these tshuvot to cut them down to a size that I can present them in the time that we have allotted to us. I leave some things in and some things out that you wouldn't expect. So efshar leha'amis. Leha'amis means to load, right? You pack a load on somebody. So leha'amis in Divrei HaRambam, it means that when you read a text, so there's maybe the majority of times, there's a simple way to read the text, and then sometimes you'll claim that the text means something else. Right, so there are times when it's just because the text itself doesn't read so clearly, so you don't know what the simple reading is, and therefore you claim something else. Or sometimes you might claim that yes, there's a simple reading, but the person who wrote it had another meaning as well. That there are all sorts of ways to read text and complicated readings of text, and it's a topic that fascinates me greatly, because in a source-based religion, where halacha, right, the law, as well as hashkaf, as well as the way we approach Torah and the service of Hashem, all is supposed to come from text. So the way we read text becomes very, very important. And the question of what's a legitimate reading of knowledge, to me, is such a central question that people have sort of stopped thinking as much about as they should. And when a posek like Rav Yudeh says, "Ulam efshar la'amis," you can load on a certain reading onto the Rambam. So what he means is, it's not the most obvious reading, but once I thought of it, sort of, or once you look at it, it's not impossible that that's what the Rambam meant. And that's such a delicate question that to me is always interesting. So in this case, he says, for example, "Mashikadav kedele shaloli aseh," when the Rambam says that you can't use bellows so that you don't do it the way an Uman does it, we assumed in Rashi that that meant you can't use an Uman's bellows, a professional bellows, because you might come to do it exactly like they do it, and that would be a problem in terms of plying a trade on Yom Tov, and looking like you're plying a trade, looking like you're doing a profession, and therefore we don't want people doing it. But when the Rambam's locution, the Rambam's phrasing of it, leaves open the possibility that the Rambam meant that not only can't you use a bellows of an Uman's bellows, a professional bellows, you can't use an ordinary home use bellows for the same reason. Kedesh lo yavol asod, kedera shalom nimosim. So when he says Lefshal Amis, what he means is, the Rambam doesn't say that explicitly, but the Rambam also doesn't differentiate the two explicitly as well. In Rashi, where Rashi only talks about the bellows of an Uman and the Shvoferet of an Uman, and so therefore it sounds like the whole topic is an Uman's things, so then you can understand that Rashi seems to leave out the bellows of a regular person, of a homeowner, of a, you know, an ordinary person, because that in fact is a whole different halacha, because there's no chance that you're going to go from using your home handy, you know, portable, less good bellows, and you're going to jump from there to think, oh, this allows me to use an Uman's bellows, to use a professional bellows. But the way the Rambam has it, he says you can't use this bellows and this bellows. He says, he mentions it all. Can't use the bellows, he says. So therefore, it's possible the Rambam held that the gezeira, the worry, was even if you're going to use a regular portable homeowner's bellows, that you might come from there. However the chashash would have been. So that's a possibility. And that would then mean that even if, so remember the Tosafot held that the homeowner's bellows are included, but if you do it with a shinui, then it's okay. But if you read the Rambam this way, it might be that he thinks that even a shinui isn't okay, because he thinks it's all part of that gezeira. And the Shulchan Aruch really reports it the way the Rian Tosafot has it, and maybe because he understood the Rambam to agree as well, that you can't increase the height of the flames of a fire. You can't blow air into a fire with any bellows, and then there's a custom to allow it with an ordinary balabatim's bellows, as long as you do it with a shino, as long as you do it with a difference. Now, I have to say, I read this shiva several times before I presented it here, and now when he comes back and he thinks that it's Rabbeinu Peretz who held that it's only a mafarash al umnim, whereas Rashi thought that as well, but now I think he thinks that since he found the Rambam saying it that way, maybe Rashi could be included, and Rashi and Tosafot and the Rambam all say what they say. So, however it is, he thinks you have two basic views. You have a view that only applies to the bellows of umnim, and then once you get to a bellows of a regular person, you don't have to worry about it at all. It's not an issue, and then the prima stove is certainly fine. And then you have this other problem of, you have Rashi and the Ri and the Rambam, who seem to have held that a bellows of professionals is a problem, but of balabatim, at least with a shinoi, should be only that they think that both kinds of bellows are a problem, but a homeowner's bellows with a shinoi, with a change in how you use it, should be okay. Now, if we take that background and turn it now to our prima stove, so he says, in fact, there are certain tradesmen, he says, like tinsmiths and people like that, who in fact are willing to use this prima stove for their malacha. So even though we said that you can use the bells of Balabayit as long as you do it, it's only with you if it's shinoi. And here, there's no shinoi, so maybe there's no room to be matir. And so all of that is the way that you could come to think there's a problem with the prima stove. You could say that the action of the hand pump that gets the kerosene up, or the alcohol, up into the top portion to heat the top thing, that's like a pump, and we say you don't use pumps, and even if you're going to use pumps of a balabayit, of homeowners, A, you have the problem that the prima stove is not clearly that there's a differentiation between that which belongs to balabayitim, to homeowners, and to professionals, since tinsmiths seem to use it in their time, seem to use it itself, and also there's no shino here because that's the way you pump it. You pump it the same way all the time. You just turn the handle or you pump the thing, and it's a pump, and therefore you have a problem. But it says, Rav Yedaya, I think that it's not true. If you look more carefully, you realize there's no reason to worry about this at all, because first of all, as this Rav Hanina from Jerba had said to him, that the pump is completely different, because even in a weekday, it's not used. Sorry, in a weekday on a regular fire, we said you to have to use a bellows, or you could use a shofaret. So it wasn't like you had to do it that way. There were other ways to do it. So that would mean that the bellows was a choice to use a more advanced form of increasing the fire. But in our Prima stoves here, this is the only way you can light it. So nobody's going to accuse you or suspect you of doing it in that higher form. Meaning, Rav Yehuda is saying that the whole worry about regular fires with their bellows that you're going to blow on it is that the people will suspect you of doing something that's really a professional trade thing, because they'll see what you're doing and it looks like it's not you're doing it because you need fire. You're doing it because you need fire to work gold or work metal. But here, where the only way to light this stove is this way, so therefore he says there's no reason to think there should be a gzeira there. He also says that the whole idea that we prohibited something because it looks too much like something else that's prohibited, that only makes sense if the prohibited thing is its own thing, like a bellows, like a different thing, and that thing is usher, for one thing, if it's a bellows of an umnim, it's also muksa, he says, because its whole malacha, its whole point of use during the week is for something that's prohibited on Yom Tov. So in itself is muktzah, and there's all these issues for it. So that's where we could say, if somebody sees what you're doing and it looks like you're using that tool that's special for that activity, so that's a problem. But in the case of a Prima stove, there is no separate kind of a Prima stove for professionals, for regular people. So you look at a Prima stove, you have no thoughts of tinsmiths or metalworkers, even if it may be true that they happen to use it, that's not going to help you. But if you see them using a bellows, so the common reaction to bellows, certainly to bellows that were the bigger kinds of bellows that were used by the professionals, but maybe, depending on your position on the relationship between a bellows of umdin, a bellows of craftsmen, and a bellows of balabatim that we saw before, you think, you worry that people will look at it and see the person doing something and assume he's doing the prohibited thing. But here, there's no reason to think that way. Nor, he says, should you think that, well, once we prohibited bellows or pumps of air, that means we include all pumps of air that are pumps of air. So he says, no, because if it's not like it in any way whatsoever, if it doesn't have any similarities to it, and they have different modes of operation. He says, the mafroch ha'omdim pu'ulato l'havir ruach l'havir ha'esh. The point of the bellows, the air, and the bellows that you blow the air on the fire to make the fire blow hotter, burn hotter and burn higher. But the mafok that we're talking about here, the pump that we're talking about here, the pressurizer that we're talking about here, its whole point of the air is to get the gas from the alcohol to get up into the top. It's just to provide a fuel. It's not to change the nature of the fire whatsoever. So it's a completely different operation, and therefore that's a reason why they shouldn't be seen as the same. In addition, the bellows of the craftsman is completely external to the fire, but here, this mafawak, this hand pump, it's really a dial from the picture they have on Wikipedia, this dial that you turn to bring in air, to pump in the air, or you pull it out and push in, or whatever it is you do it, but it's part of the machine itself. So if it's part of the machine itself, it isn't as obviously a mafawak, a bellows at all, a pump at all, because all you see is somebody, you know, manipulating the machine itself, and then it's getting hot to be able to cook things. And since it's connected to it, he thinks that's another reason to be makil, another reason to see it as separate from the item itself, and therefore not part of the gzeira, which was on mafochin, which were bellows. It's more like, he says, we used to have a kerosene lamps, right, when you would get light out of a lamp, so you could make the lamp brighter or less bright, depending on how much kerosene you supplied to it, and there was a dial, they would allow you to do that. So nobody ever thought that that was similar to the bellows you had, even though there actually you're making the fire go higher and not higher. But since it's part of the lamp itself, you just see it as part of the workings of the lamp, and you don't think of it as being a problem. Then there were some people who said, you know what, there's a new kind of a Prima stove, and it's a similar machine, but it's especially for metal workers of various sorts, and it's got the same basic workings as the Prima stove that you cook on. But at the top, instead of having a metal thing on top that you can put a pot or a pan down on top of it, it's on the side. And it's only really used for whatever it was used for, I think, metal smithing of various sorts. You put the metal in that way. And therefore, you can't really use it to cook anything. So therefore, says Rav Yedaya, then you don't have to worry about it, right? Because it's a completely different machine. It may be that we call them all Prima stoves, but since they're obviously different in their operations, meaning, when we were talking about the bellows that belong to professionals or the bellows that belonged to homeowners, they were both basically bellows. They were two long poles of wood, let's say. In between, there's an accordion-like area that would take in air and push out air, and you push it back and forth. So it could be that one is bigger and one is smaller because the bigger one belongs to the professionals, but they look fundamentally the same. But here with the Prima stove, there's a huge important difference. One has an area on top for putting down pots and pans to cook on them. The other has the hot area is on the side, and it's used in completely different ways, and it's impossible to cook on. So those are completely different machines. And the fact they have similar names and similar operations is not an issue for us. Not only that, he says, since that one came later, meaning the early Prima stove was for cooking on it, and then these people said to themselves, oh, this is a good idea. We could actually make a good, you know, forger's tool out of this, a good kiln, a good whatever it was out of this, and they made a new one. So Ravai Yudaya says, so the fact they made a new one isn't going to stop us from using the old one. It's not like we're going to all of a sudden create a new isser, a new prohibition, because people came out with this new model, because the old model was allowed for itself, because it was what it was. And then he puts in an important consideration that comes up often in halacha. There's always a worry, it comes from Gemara and Gittin, there's always a worry that if a later item, later issue leads us to say that something should be prohibited, when we do that, we have to worry and think about whether in doing so we're implying anything about previous generations, right? If we're going to leave the impression they got it wrong and we're not getting it right, that's a big issue in halacha. It comes up in lots of contexts. I'm not getting into those contexts, but this would be one of them. He says, if I'm going to all of a sudden say the Prima stove can't be used because of the new other kind of Prima stove that had been created, I'm going to lead to la'az al harishonim. I'm going to lead to people thinking that the earlier generation got it wrong. They didn't know halacha well enough. They didn't understand halacha. And that's going to be a problem. So I think that's a very complicated and important topic as well. It's always an interesting question, like what happens if previous generations were relying on some kula, some leniency, and nowadays we don't have to rely on that leniency because our times have changed and our conditions have changed. So what do you do then? So there are those who will say, no, you're being multi-lazim people, and there are those who say you're not, and it gets into a whole big question that's not our topic now. Fundamentally, Rav Yudaya thinks it's permissible, and then he says, and then after I wrote all this, I sent it to Rav Kook. He says, Lagona Godolam before some, to the great genius and well-known genius Rav Kook. I note that here because it's important to remember that Rav Kook was well-known for his Torah, having nothing to do with the topics that later made him much more famous, his personal private writings and musings on spirituality and on the nature of the Jewish people, the nature of Kedusha, the nature of sanctity, and all the things that later became very, very popular. That wasn't really what Rav Kook was known for in his lifetime. He was known as a great Torah scholar, and he was a great Torah scholar, and that was why most of his actual public work was done. I think he has some letters that say some of his other ideas as well, but fundamentally he was known as a great, tremendous Gaon in Torah, very knowledgeable person in Torah. So, Rav Yudaya says, I showed it to him, to the Rav Kook, who's the chief rabbi of Israel, and his responsum. So now at minute 27, we get to 19th of Iyar, Tafresh Tzadi Dalet, and it's really very brief, because fundamentally Rav Kook agrees with Rav Yudaya. So, but he writes it all out again, meaning he clearly read the letter, but he feels the need to write not all of it, but much of it out again, so we'll just briefly review some of his central points. So Rav Kook reviews that issue in Tosfos and says, from the fact that Tosfos prohibit all mefochin, all bellows, it would seem that any kinds of pumps should be prohibited. But then the fact that they say, but it's okay if you do it with a shinui, Rav Kook understood that to mean that it means that it's not a completely general decree and ordinance about not using mefochim, pumps, bellows, and the like. It's only where you have to worry that it looks too much like what the umnim do. And if that's true, so it's kal v'chomer in our situation of the Prima stove, because everything about them shows that they're only done for bishul, that they're only done for cooking and not for maase umot. So that's very similar to Rav Yudaya, but it makes it, I think, to me, a certain extent clearer. He's saying that it's a fun question of what was the decree, what was the prohibition that was originally promulgated and created, and if it was only about looking like what professional craftsmen do, then the Prima stove clearly doesn't do that. And it's always worth remembering, he says, that if you start telling people they can't use a Prima stove, you're going to reduce their Simchat Yom Tov, their joy Yom Tov, because they won't be able to cook as easily and as well. And Simchat Yom Tov is also a value in halacha. That's always a question of conflict of values in halacha. So here you have a decree about bellows and about pumping up fires. So he says here, I think there's more than enough room to say that it looks completely different. Its function is clearly different because it's all about cooking. And especially since there's a problem with that it would create a problem for Simchas Yom Tov, we don't want to get into that. Especially, he says, like this, Rav Chavita from Jerba says that the Maftoach Shel Nefachim is only this Maftoach, it's only Lahavir to make it burn. And here, it's the whole point of it is just to by virtue of the air that you pump in to get the gas to go up to be able to heat the top area. And he says when you have something whose purpose is different, this whole question of what makes things different, is it the form of the action? And the form of the action, they're very similar. The action is pumping in air. So you might have said if the problem is using a pump that pumps in air, then here we have a pump that pumps in air. Shouldn't that be a problem? So he says, and this is agreeing with what came before, he just phrases it slightly differently in a way that I think makes it a little bit more clear. He says that if the purpose of the action is different, that's different enough to exempt it from being considered part of that decree. That's not, to me, necessarily obvious. You could easily imagine a more formalistic view that said that any action that has the form of the action should be a problem, and therefore Rav Kook is saying no. He thinks that when it comes to these kind of gzirot Rabbanan, that as long as tachlit ha-pe'ula, the goal of the activity, is different, that's enough of a shinu, that's enough of a different from the other thing to make it not part of that original gzirah. And part of his support for that, he says, if you look in general in Hilchot Shabbos, we have this category called an av melacha, a broad category that the Torah prohibited, and then you have toladot, which are also prohibited for the Torah, but because they extend from the original av. The av defined a certain kind of activity, and the toladot are similar activities, but not ones that would have been included in the original Torah definition of the original av. So Rav Kook says, the way we define toladot is that they have similar functions, similar purposes to the avot, and that shows that what we care about in these kinds of situations is the purpose of the activity, the function, the goal of the activity, and not the specific, you know, technical look of how the activity happens. And then he says, once you know that the whole purpose of this pump is not anywhere similar to that other kind of pump, because this one is only about getting moving the gas around, the other one is about increasing the heat, and therefore it's not part of the gzeira, we don't have to get into the whole question of whether that's the gzeira of the using the bellows, where the decree was about maritain, the people, the conclusion people would draw, or that it's too, it looks too much like, or it is too much like the activity of a professional. We don't have to get into that, he says, because that's not our situation. He goes on a little bit more, but most of it is fundamentally including what came before and agreeing with what has come before, and that was the back and forth between Rav Chavita of Jerba, Rav Vadi Hadaya and Yaskil Avdi, and who turned to the question over to Rav Kook, who largely ratified Rav Vadi Hadaya said in his response of 19 of Iyar of Tafresh Sadi Dalet of 1934. And with that, we'll close with thanks to the OU, to Rabbi Jacob Brown, to David Hakhauser for helping us put these shirim and making them available to you. This was a responsible day for the 19th of Iyar. Have a great day.